Now to the financial picture, which is complicated enough on this first day of July that it warrants careful unpacking. The headline from Fitch is stark. The U.S. PCE price index has exceeded the Federal Reserve's 2% inflation target for 63 consecutive months. That's 5 years and 3 months of continuous overshoot. Fitch is calling it the longest inflation overshoot since the early 1990s, and headline inflation hit 4.1% in May. To put that in context, the Fed raised rates aggressively starting in 2022, specifically to break the inflation cycle. 5+ years later, inflation is still running at more than double the target.
What this means, practically, is that the Fed's rate-cutting trajectory, which markets have been pricing in, is constrained. You can't aggressively cut rates when inflation is at 4.1%. The market consensus at the start of this year was for 2 to 3 rate cuts in 2026. Fitch's data suggests that consensus was optimistic, and the contrast with Europe is striking. The ECB is signaling a July rate pause as Eurozone inflation has cooled sharply. The European Central Bank's monetary policy is diverging from the Fed's in ways that have real currency and capital flow implications.
Goldman Sachs issued a warning about Korea-driven leverage pushing global markets toward crisis territory. This requires some explanation for listeners unfamiliar with the mechanics. Korean retail investors have historically used significant leverage, borrowed money, to take positions in global equities, particularly in technology stocks. When those positions are concentrated and interconnected, an unwinding can cascade across markets in ways that aren't obvious from surface-level data. Goldman is flagging that the concentration and leverage ratios have reached levels that historically precede forced selling events.
The BofA bubble indicator for chip stocks is a related data point. Bank of America's proprietary indicator is approaching its maximum reading for semiconductor equities, meaning the valuation signals they track are at historical extremes. This doesn't predict a precise timing for a correction, but it does suggest that the AI-driven semiconductor rally has priced in a lot of optimism. NVIDIA, TSMC, and the broader chip supply chain have been bid up on AI demand expectations, and the question is whether actual AI infrastructure spending is sufficient to justify those multiples.
Here's where I'd flag an important concept. Because the Goldman and BofA warnings are prompting some people to ask whether there's a regulatory response available. And that gets us into antitrust territory that's worth understanding clearly. A lot of listeners hear, tech giants are too powerful and assume antitrust law is the obvious answer. But antitrust law under the Sherman Act doesn't prohibit being big or even being dominant. What the law prohibits is using monopoly power to exclude competition or harm consumers. Market share alone, even 80% or 90% market share, is not illegal. A company becomes legally vulnerable when it takes specific anti-competitive actions to maintain that position, like predatory pricing designed to kill competitors, or exclusive dealing arrangements that lock out rivals.
That's an important distinction, Sarah. The classic analogy is a company that wins a large market by being genuinely better and cheaper isn't violating antitrust law. That's competition working. The problem arises when a dominant firm starts using its position to prevent others from competing on merit. Think of it like a race where one runner wins because they're faster versus a runner who wins because they're blocking the track. The Sherman Act cares about the blocking, not the speed advantage.
And that framework matters for how we think about AI infrastructure concentration right now. If AWS, Google Cloud, and Microsoft Azure dominate AI infrastructure because they built the best products and invested most heavily, that's legal market power. If they start using cloud contracts to foreclose competitors' access to enterprise customers, that's where antitrust questions become relevant. The DOJ's technology division is actively tracking these dynamics.
On the pharmaceutical side, mid-sized drug makers are balking at Trump's Medicaid pricing plan. The administration's proposal would effectively cap what manufacturers can charge Medicaid programs, which mid-sized companies argue would disproportionately harm their pipelines relative to large pharma, which has more revenue diversification. This is a classic regulatory distribution fight. The policy's burden doesn't fall evenly across the industry, and the companies who bear more of the burden are the most vocal opponents.
Vice President Vance disclosing up to $500,000 in Bitcoin, with his total crypto holdings having roughly doubled, is a story that sits at the intersection of markets, politics, and policy. The disclosure itself is required by law, but the timing and the scale raise questions about whether a senior administration official with significant personal Bitcoin holdings should be involved in cryptocurrency policy decisions. The optics, at minimum, are complicated.
California finalizing a $3,500 EV rebate for first-time buyers, funded by a $270 million combination of state funds and matching automaker contributions, represents a direct state-level response to the federal EV tax credit elimination in 2025. California is essentially running its own EV incentive program because the federal one no longer exists. Whether other states follow this model, and whether automakers in other markets match contributions the way they apparently did here, will determine how much the federal policy shift actually slows EV adoption nationally.